55% of Republican voters, 68% of teabaggers, supported increasing Clean Water Act protections from mountaintop removal. The support is overwhelmingly in favor of increasing clean water safeguards. This in the face of elected representatives who insist that we need to blow up Appalachia for jobs. 76% of those surveyed in Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia fully support or support fully enforcing and or increasing Clean Water Act protections to safeguard streams, rivers, and lakes from mountaintop removal. Here's the breakout on parties as to the opposition to mountaintop removal. Get this. 64% of Democrats oppose mountaintop removal. 60% of independents oppose mountaintop removal. But get out the smelling salts, kids. 51% of Republicans oppose mountaintop removal. Now, these are the respondents to this survey are all voters. 48% of those surveyed in the four states said they are less likely to support elected officials who are in favor of weakening environmental regulations on mountaintop removal. 15% said that they're more likely to support elected officials. This is getting kind of broad, isn't it? And people are smarter than they're given credit for being. 60% of those surveyed said that environmental protections are good for the economy or have no impact. 25% people who were obviously dropped on their heads at birth said environmental protections are bad for the economy. This is stunning data. The coal industry, despite its vast millions spent to poison the mines and poison the waters and poison the bodies of little children living in Appalachia, despite all those millions, people have seen through it. Despite the fear campaigns, despite the lies and the mischaracterizations and the mendacity, despite the threats of violence, despite the acts of violence, people still know it is and want it to end. And you know what? I have to say something here. You had a hand in it. Know what sort of paths information necessarily takes. We know it is certainly much more like a web than some sort of straight line. But you have learned about mountaintop removal via this program, and you have gone forward, and you have educated yourselves about it. And you have talked to people. You have refused to live in silence. And by refusing to live in silence, by spreading the word, by talking to friends and neighbors, by talking about it via your email contacts, it has begun to filter back into Appalachia, from whence so many Americans' families arose. So give yourselves a little pat on the back and then get back to work. This is big news. Every study, every piece of data that comes out takes away one more dirty rock that our bought and paid for politicians can hide behind. And pretty soon, they're going to be out in the open. And they're just going to have to stand there. And if any, and the only thing that will shield them is millions of dollars from the coal industry, is the next question. What will that do? Is filthy money in our political process enough to defeat the will of a majority of voters in these four states, Tennessee, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Virginia? Can Citizens United money drown out the voices of people demanding human rights in these four, in corners of these four states and virtually all of mine? Well, that's another thing that will only be determined by the likes of us. To see if we will stand tall and proud and go forward, or run and hide at the first hint of violence. When that woman came out of the crowd and hit Judy Bonds in the head, she didn't run and hide. Little did she know, she fought all the way. She struggled all the way into her grave because she understood the importance of it. Maria Gonneau has never run and hid. Beau Webb will not run and hide. Vernon Haltom doesn't have a dime's worth of runaway in his entire being. And so I hope, are you equally determined? Because see, there are so many levels on which ending mountaintop removal operates. There are so many things that ending mountaintop removal says. Because it will be a victory for women's rights. For the integrity of women's bodies. It will be a victory for children who won't have to go to school in toxic waste zones. It will be a victory for the economy, which will then get to diversify. And we'll finally have to start looking for real answers, not the phonied up, dummied up, ginned up, faked up, rubed up, false non-choices of a coal-based mono-economy where it's, you know, the horse by the door or no horse at all. And for those who think that the South is the problem, it will be a solution there as well. Because it will show that we can stand together and demand what is best for the totality of our society. And in doing that, well, why do you know, it's not just the money. People like Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, they know that mountaintop removal is a chink in their armor, that it is the soft underbelly, and they know that when that cracks, other things are likely to go too. This is a victory coming. We do not have it yet, but we will. This is a coming victory that is a game changer for the entire country. And I thank you for your optimism. If you want to learn more, just go to earthjustice.org. It's filed under features. Maybe just search poll, Strong Opposition to MTR, and links to the full data are there via PDF files. Pass it around. We will be the change we want to see in Appalachia and in this country. But there's a lot of other stuff to get into this evening. You probably already know that. My apologies for any troubles getting the stream out. Texas Betsy has let me know a couple of times now that we've burped. I don't know what's going on, but we've got a clean recording here, so hopefully the podcast will be okay. Never a dull moment, you know. And hopefully all this goes away tomorrow morning. But no, there are other things to get into this evening, and it almost, after Monday night's corndog triptych, you almost begin to ask yourself, wait a minute, they're kidding, right? They got to be putting this on. You got Rick Perry hollering, get a rope for Ben Bernanke! I'm no fan of Ben Bernanke, but you know, Jesus, did you hear? Holy mackerel. Well, I won't say what we'd do to him down in Texas, but it wouldn't be very nice. Ew. And there's just all kinds of Sigmund Freud stuff going on with that man. Some reporter asked him a question about something Mitt Romney said about him, you know, Willard. And he said, send him my love. Okay, Rick. Sure. Gotcha. But the queen of crazy takes the cake. It is, you know, the 16th day of August, 2011. I know exactly where I was this day in 1977. I was in the back seat of a Dodge Monaco Brome station wagon. In just a couple of short years, I would learn to drive in that station wagon. And we were heading home from St. Louis, Missouri. And the news, well, the world seemed to have stopped, you see. Because there are people, regardless of what they do on this planet, who touch millions of lives. Quite often, it's not someone in the political realm so much as it is someone that has brought some degree of pleasure, moments of pleasure, to life, or who has changed the way the rules by which we operate on some cultural level. This was one of those days. Not that Michelle Bachmann would ever really know, because Michelle Bachmann is an idiot.
Before we get started, let's all say happy birthday to Elvis Presley today. Happy birthday! We played you a little bit of Promised Land when we pulled up, but you can't do better than Elvis Presley. We thought we'd celebrate his birthday as we get started the Celebrating Take Our Country Back Tour.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Elvis, on this, the anniversary of your death. Happy birthday, King. Happy birthday, Jesus, she's like, I don't know, she's like Frosty the Snowman. Every time he melts and gets refrozen and gets the hat back on it, happy birthday! My God. Now, just as yesterday with the corndog triptych, there are questions that this degree of idiocy, this degree of unmitigated stupidity, this tone deafness, that this engenders questions beyond, didn't she know this was the anniversary of the king's passing? Serious questions. Just as with the corndog triptych yesterday, no campaign manager, no campaign advisor, no press creature worth his or her salt would have let those corndogs enter those mouths with so much as a shadow box pinhole camera nearby. But Six Gun Rick Perry and Michelle Bugspray Crazy Bachman, are either unmanageable or their handlers are total amateurs. And this question about Michelle Bachman keeps cropping up. The corn dog, the giving the first bite of the corn dog to Marcus. And then going all the way back to her shaggy dog story about the U2 boats. You remember that famous, well, almost this bit of video that Matt Osborne put together. Where she went to speechifying event after speechifying event and talked about how the troop transport Dorchester was torpedoed by a German U2 boat. You know, the one with, Captain Bono at the helm. Now, jug of punch, Elvis wasn't a JFK moment for me either, but when you're 14 years old, trapped in the backseat of a Dodge Monaco Brougham station wagon hurtling down I-55 southbound, and you're headed from St. Louis to Memphis, they ain't going to be much else on the radio between those two cities. But there, no, there really is. There's a handler issue related to this story. Because, and she sort of gives it away herself. We played you a little bit of Promised Land before as we pulled up. God, with her, that was probably the Promised Land by the Kingston Trio or something. I mean, she wouldn't listen to that demonic Elvis, would she? Elvis the Pelvis? Sent white folks scurrying for the scurrying in horror for the church. Look at the man's doing with his pelvis bone, that Elvis. He's going to corrupt the youth of America. Oh, we got to get back into the churches. Yeah, they've been using that hustle for a long time, the for-profit, the religion industry. We've lost, Elvis Presley proves that we have lost our moral values in America. A few years later, they were burning Beatles albums. Less than 10 years ago, they were burning Dixie Chicks albums. They just gotta burn something, don't they? I know these things may seem simple or trivial, but what they actually are is proof that there is no way in this or any other universe that Michelle Bachman is qualified to be the president of the United States. Just not. Because, among other things, she's an amateur staff that lets her just go out and say anything she wants to, and doesn't dare challenge her, or else she'll, I'm getting one of my sick headaches. And so on, she gets to do things like stepping out and telling, yeah, that.
Started. Let's all say happy birthday to Elvis Presley today. Happy birthday. We played you a little bit of Promised Land when we pulled up, but you can't do better than Elvis Presley. And we thought we'd celebrate his birthday as we get started the celebrating Take Our Country Back Tour.
Yeah, okay, Michelle, whatever you say. And, yeah, you want to live in a country like John Wayne Gacy lived in. There's millions of them. And you would think that a political process in a country as large and, yes, still powerful as ours would be able to weed these morons out. But that political process has been neutered by money. And if the Koch brothers decide they want Michelle Bachmann, they have the power to see to it that you get Michelle Bachmann. You know, you dummy up some video game voting results here. You intimidate some voters there. You see what I mean? She spent $120,000, I think, on the Ames straw poll because each vote was $30. It cost $30 to cast a vote. I wouldn't give $30 to cross the street and see her, let alone to cast a vote in a phony, meaningless election. But she bought the election. She got 4,800 votes, and they paid for 4,000 of them. But suddenly that somehow legitimizes her, as opposed to the... And these are gaffes. These aren't gaffes. These are examples of rampant, flaming, hair-tearing stupidity. This is proof that if you've got a little bit of money... And you suck the public teat well enough, and you talk and say the right code phrases in front of the right fundies, any idiot can now get into government. Caveat, it doesn't work that way on our side. We generally require a modicum of intelligence. It really is our foot in the bucket moment. Yeah. Darlene writing in, she says, Bob, do you notice how Michelle Bachmann talks to her supporters? Very slow, methodical, and in a sing-song voice. She talks to them like they're two-year-olds. Nothing against two-year-olds, notes Darlene. They're way smarter than Bachmann supporters. And it seems she and her handlers know on some level that her supporters aren't all that bright. Oh, Darlene, I think they know that on a number of levels. But the problem is, they can get away with it. I mean, that's one of the things about that clip. Let's just go back for a minute to when she says, you know, we're gonna say happy birthday to the dead guy, right?
Before we get started, let's all say happy birthday to Elvis Presley today. Happy birthday! We played you a little bit of Promised Land when we pulled up, but you can't do better than...
Yeah, you hear the clapping? They'll clap for anything. And before we get started, let's have a big round of applause for Lutefisk! Well, wait a minute. Yeah, no, they'd clap. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe tomorrow it'll be Prince's birthday. Or tomorrow it'll be Kurt Cobain's birthday. Or Radar, it's Iowa, maybe it'll be Radar O'Reilly's. I'm happy to be here. in Ottumwa, Iowa, home of that great patriot, Walter Radar O'Reilly, who served so nobly in the Korean conflict, where our great nation faced down the Vietnamese. Come on, tell me it's impossible. Part of it has to do with her being a fundy, because part of it has to do with the fact that since she's a fundy, she can't very well tell the difference between fantasy and reality. The biggest part of her world is made up of a fantasy. You know, where her bearded juvenile delinquent god rapes a teenager, and the teenager gives birth to the god's son, whom the god then murders to prove how much he loves the world. And if you don't believe in the murdered son, the god who loves the world so much tortures you for all eternity. You know, when that's your operating paradigm, everything else is going to... normal. Birthday, death day, same, same. And she may be the last woman on earth for whom Elvis is not enough. She has to say Elvis Presley. Jesus, lady, he's Elvis. Nobody's going to mistake him for Elvis Costello. But it just goes on and on and on. And Rick Perry, with this business of questioning Barack Obama's love of the United States. There really are moments when these freaks open their mouths and you wish that dueling statute wasn't on the books. Because you know what? In a mano between Rick Perry and Barack Obama, I got my money's on Barack Obama. Yeah, I'm not so much with the 73-dimensional chess that I... but I'm pretty sure that he could take Rick Perry. And cowboy boots will slow you down, you know? And by the way, a big to the reporter who asked Rick Perry, Governor, do you think Barack Obama loves America? What kind of a dumbass question is that? Where did you go to journalism school, you jackass? Yes, it's a... you know what? That is one of those gotcha questions. And maybe the right wing's correct when they say that it's designed to make Rick Perry look bad. But it only makes Rick Perry look bad if Rick Perry rises to the bait as he did and says, well, I don't know, go ask the president. Because the answer is, wow, you're a dumbass. What kind of a question is that to ask? You're going to go ask Barack Obama if he thinks I love America? Because, you know, if he asks Barack Obama, does Rick Perry love America, Barack Obama's going to say, I can't believe you asked that question. Of course, I'm sure he does. Why not instead, you know, you get one question, man. That's the nature of for-profit media now. You get one question. It's the journalistic equivalent, under most circumstances, of the Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame. You get one question. So instead of, do you think President Obama loves America, how about, Governor Perry, you talk about what a job creator you are, and yet there's less than 1% difference between national unemployment and Texas unemployment. How is that being a job creator? Or, Governor Perry, your state is the single most polluted state in the union, and you still hate the Environmental Protection Agency. Why is that? Or, Governor Perry, why is it that more children are uninsured in Texas than any other state in the union? But instead, what do you get? Governor Perry, do you think Barack Obama loves America? Put that kid, put that reporter back on the Cub beat until he learns of it. Jesus, he's probably a millionaire. Gonna go, and he's gonna hang Ben Bernanke. Mother McCree. No, we got a ton of stuff tonight. We'll take a little break and come back. I mean, it is the anniversary of... Oh, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Texas Betsy. It's a racist, dumbass question. Because the fact of the matter is, you wouldn't ask Barack Obama whether white Rick Perry loves his country. That's a question you reserve for, you know, that one. Who might still be a Kenyan Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people and an anti-colonialist bent. Dumbasses. Just dumbasses. So we take a little break and we come back. Your call's on the way. Still more stuff in the stack. Oh, wait, no, let's not take the break yet. I got to do this. You know, I have a love, and it was instilled in me very early. I have a love of poetry. And I saw a story yesterday, as a matter of fact. That made me think about good old Rudyard Kipling. Backstory, years and years and years ago, I think I was a sophomore in high school, just like Ferg's about to be. And I actually won the state championship. Wow, talking about resting on past glories. I won the state championship in poetic interpretation for a reading of Rudyard Kipling's Gunga Din. And so Ferg and I guess I have Rudyard Kipling on the brain. For a variety of reasons, but, you know, Ferg wanted me to, and, you know, I'll teach it because God knows he's not going to get poetic interp up at Midland Fail High School. So we were working a little bit on Gunga Din. But I saw a story yesterday that immediately sent me back to Mr. Kipling. It's a poem from February of 1899. Kipling wrote it upon the entry of the U.S. into a war with people in the Philippines in order to subdue them and expand American empire. Of the poem, Teddy Roosevelt, whom a lot of people seem to be re-lionizing these days, copied the poem and sent it to a buddy of his, one Senator Henry Cabot Lodge. Roosevelt remarked that it was rather poor poetry, but good sense from the expansion point of view. The full title of the poem is The White Man's Burden, The United States and the Philippine Islands. We know it now simply as The White Man's Burden, and it is understood for the piece of racist garbage that it was. Take up the white man's burden. Send forth the best ye breed. Go send your sons to exile to serve your captives' need, to wait in heavy harness on fluttered folk and wild, your new-caught sullen peoples, half-devil and half-child. Take up the white man's burden, in patience to abide, to veil the threat of terror and check the show of pride, by open speech and simple and hundred times made plain to seek another's profit and work another's gain. Take up the white man's burden, and reap his old reward, the blame of those ye better, the hate of those ye guard. The cry of hosts ye humor, slowly to the light. Why brought ye us from bondage, our loved Egyptian night? Take up the white man's burden, have done with childish days. The lightly proffered laurel, the easy ungrudged praise, comes now to search your manhood through all the thankless years, cold-edged with dear-bought wisdom, the judgment of your peers. Wow, is that disgusting. What put me in mind of a story like that? Or of a poem like that? Well, I'll tell you. There's a line in Gunga Din where the old campaigner, the old British campaigner, says, "Now in Inge's sunny clime, where I used to spend my time, a-savin' of Her Majesty the Queen, of all them black-faced crew, the finest man I knew was our regimental bestie, Gunga Din." Well, it is Inge's sunny clime that put me in mind of that poem. And more particularly, and this via a story in Agence France-Presse, U.S. Vice Consul Maureen Chow was giving an address in the Tamil Nadu capital of Chennai. It was at the Study Abroad Orientation Program at SRM University. This woman is the Vice Consul for the United States in India. And she apparently has a love of India. She spent a considerable amount of time there. And she was recounting her student days when she was traveling through India and told the story of taking a 24-hour train trip from Delhi to Orissa that took 72 hours instead of 24. Her remarks, Maureen Chow, she said she was, and this is a quote, on a 24-hour train trip from Delhi to Orissa. But after 72 hours, the train still did not reach the destination, and my skin became dirty and dark like the Tamilians. Dirty and dark like the Tamilians. Of all them black-faced crew, the finest man I knew was our regimental bestie, Gunga Din. Take up, Maureen Chow, take up the white man's burden. To seek another's profit and work another's gain. Take up the white man's burden and reap his old reward, the blame of those ye better, the hate of those ye guard. The Tamil political party PMK, its founder S. Ramadas, called for Maureen Chow to resign and be expelled from India, according to a report in the Times of India. He complained, and correctly so, "It is highly condemnable. While Tamils have been excelling in many fields, including information technology, and surprise many, including Americans, a U.S. official saying this cannot be tolerated. People like her should not be allowed to stay in Tamil Nadu. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs should call her in person to express its opposition and expel her immediately from the country." Instead, the U.S. consulate apologized, saying, yesterday, at a study abroad orientation program at SRM University, Vice Consul Maureen Chow gave a speech describing positive memories from her own study abroad experiences in India 23 years ago. During the speech, Ms. Chow made an inappropriate comment. Ms. Chow deeply regrets if her unfortunate remarks offended anyone, as that was certainly not her intent. Didn't we have a little conversation last night about all liability is based on fault? Well, I didn't mean to offend the dirty, dark-skinned Tamilians. I mean, they are. She apologizes if anyone was offended. That's not an apology. That's a non-apology apology. Is all the life gone out of the English language now? Whatever happened to a good old-fashioned earnest, wow, I really screwed up, and I will try never to do that again. Jug of punch, I don't know. It's not Mitch McConnell's wife. That's Elaine Chao. This is Maureen Chao. Family relation? No answer. But God. Really? I was dirty and dark-skinned like the Tamilians. Come on, honey. I know you wrote down your remarks. And maybe now you fly on a plane or you travel in a limo. But still, at some point, did that not go, maybe I ought not say it that way? To say my skin had become as dark as the Tamils? Well, okay. Stick folks in intense subcontinental sun, you will dark up. Even white folks. Got to remember, what was it, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years ago? It was Aryan peoples coming off of the steppes of Central Asia and invading the Indian subcontinent. Hence we get the Bhagavad Gita or the Rig Veda? You know, the whole religious structure that comes from that Aryan invasion of the Indian subcontinent? Yeah, those are white folks. Spent some time in the sun. Got good and dark. A little Lemurian, too. It's okay. But dark and dirty? Is that another one of those moments where it only happens when it's happening, that the words are coming out of your mouth and you suddenly everything's slow motion and I became dark and dirty? And your conscience and your inner editor and your inner monologue manager's going, no, I didn't say that. I did. We don't need these little moments in 2011. Despite whatever else we may say about Barack Obama, at least for a little while there, we were making a little headway on getting the United States' reputation back in the rest of the world. That George W. Dimwit did such a magnificent, truly, I mean, awe-inspiring job of destroying and dragging through the dirt. No, we don't need that in 2011. I guess that would have been an appropriate Moran Monday nomination, wouldn't it? Maureen Chow, U.S. Vice Consulate to India. So we got to her a day late. You'll have that, I guess. So I guess the internet is burping along. I'm seeing some buffering here periodically. Hopefully it's not wreaking too much havoc with your own systems. And like I said, with any luck at all, it'll be gone by tomorrow. I just won't be here. John Fox and I talked a little bit about him maybe filling in one or two of those shows. I don't know if he's going to be able to or not. I'll have to check back with him. He's been a very busy man lately. So keep an eye on Twitter. Keep an eye on the... And by the way, The Horn has its own Facebook and Twitter page. Just look it up. It would be a good thing if everybody would friend up on the Horn page, and we'll try to post stuff there as well. Yeah. Oh, so much stuff. And we'll try to get to as much of it as possible, but it's far more important that we get to your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4. Head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Just got a note from John Fox saying no, he's got an unavoidable conflict. So, we'll be reruns, and that'll be fine, and we'll get back at it on Monday. But that means that's 3 days I won't be here encouraging you to join the Thrifty 250. We do need around 10 folks to do that each night. This is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That would be 40 folks at $10 a person, and we'll be taken care of until we get back on Monday. You know, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. A little more on PayPal in a minute. Those guys are beginning to disturb me, and one of the things that I think John and I are going to work on is getting our Google checkout set up and maybe finding even another way to do contributions besides PayPal, because that guy that started PayPal is a creepy bastard. You'll find out why. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We are on our way back. Coming up next, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, followed by your calls. Light them up. Get in early. That way everybody gets their say. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The lights are going dim. The sound of your breathing has made the mood I'm in. All of my resistance lying on the floor, taking me to places I've never been before. Ooh, and I can feel. You got me in your spell. 100 magic fingers got a swirling carousel. There's something within me the doctor could prescribe. Your love is doing something that I just can't describe. But I can feel it. Way down.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, August 16, 2011.
Obama plays the infrastructure card.
Let's rebuild America.
Perry jumps in.
Let me tell you, when I'm in all the way.
The summer of records continues. Today, it's record rains in the Northeast. Plus, Arctic ice is melting faster than predicted.
See? Told you those scientists can't get it right. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
We need serious regulatory reform, not just repealing Obamacare, but ending the EPA's regulatory reign of terror.
Ending the EPA's regulatory reign of who, what?
The EPA's regulatory reign of terror.
The EPA's reign of terror, John Huntsman? Hyperbole much? Man. And remember, John Huntsman is supposed to be the sane one. This is your Green News Report. So, Desi Doyen, over the weekend in Iowa, Republican candidate John Huntsman referred to the EPA's reign of terror. Not once, but twice. The EPA's reign of terror?
Yeah, I guess terror is folded up with regulations to protect public health and kids from asthma.
Yeah, right. Clean the water. It's terror. These are, suicide bombers at the EPA? Good Lord. What do you have for us today in reality news, Des?
Well, there's this from President Obama.
Let's rebuild America. We could be rebuilding roads and bridges and schools and parks all across America right now. There's a bill sitting in Congress right now that would set up an infrastructure bank to get that moving, attracting private sector dollars, not just public dollars. Congress needs to move.
I ask for reality, Des. Do you think that this Congress is going to pass any kind of bill, spend any kind of money, you know, to actually put people back to work in this nation?
Well, that was what Obama was calling for. Even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the unions are agreed that infrastructure spending is good spending for the United States. Contrast Obama's call for infrastructure spending and jobs with the Republicans vying for the presidential nomination in 2012 who were bashing Obama. Most of the candidates were at the Iowa State Fair over the weekend, with some enjoying those foot-long corn dogs perhaps a little too much. Representative Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota won the Iowa straw poll on Saturday. And on the same day, Texas Governor Rick Perry, who was not in Iowa, completely coincidentally chose to announce,
I declare to you today as a candidate for President of the United States.
Governor Perry, who once flirted with the idea of secession, and Michelle Bachmann are both anti-science ideologues who believe creationism should be taught in schools instead of evolution. And it's also easy to sum up the positions of all of the Republican candidates for president on the environment. They're all against it, and against any regulations that protect the air and water, natural resources, and public health. For his part, Perry told ThinkProgress.org that he is calling on Obama to, quote, put a moratorium on regulations across this country because his EPA regulations are killing jobs across America.
If, after all, the EPA is a bunch of terrorists, it's only the American thing to oppose them and what it is they stand for, is it not?
Well, that's exactly what former Utah Governor John Huntsman said at the debate in Iowa hosted by Fox News last week. He was the only candidate to even mention the word environment at all. And, of course, he blames the outsourcing of American manufacturing jobs on that EPA reign of terror.
Oy.
It's also really easy to sum up the positions of all of the Republican presidential candidates on the science underlying defying climate change. They are all against it and against any concrete action to reduce emissions or reduce our consumption of oil. Huntsman, Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, and now dropout Tim Pawlenty have all flip-flopped on their previous support for the science. But while the corporate media was distracted by shiny Republicans and their fried butter in Iowa, the planet was busy not watching cable news or being swayed by straw polls. Just a few weeks after breaking its all-time records for high temperatures, on Sunday, New York City broke its all-time records for one-day rainfall, with flooded streets and subways in low-lying parts of Manhattan, making President Obama's case for upgrading the nation's crumbling infrastructure. Water mains across the country have been bursting in record numbers due to the record heat wave. Then those kooky scientists at NOAA said on Monday that July 2011 marks over 300 consecutive months that global temperatures have been above the 20th century average. The impacts of rising global temperatures are also accelerating faster than predictions. Researchers at MIT released a new report this week calculating that ice in the Arctic is melting at least four times faster than predicted by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and that if MIT's calculations are correct, the Arctic will be ice-free in summer as soon as 2030, a full 70 years sooner than predicted by the IPCC.
But let's pay no attention to those scientists, because clearly the ones at the UN, they got it wrong. It's much worse than they had warned. Brother, for more on that story and all of those that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report, because the rest of the media ain't gonna tell you what's really going on. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Puddle Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Puddle Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Puddle Genius, we got your soap right here.
And I got that body stuff.
www.doublegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Give it to Texas Betsy. She is the soul of, what would we say, gentle snark. Announcing we have a Twitter account without giving the name of it. Not as helpful as you might think, Bob. I can't win. You know, I just kind of make these bold assumptions every now and then that everybody kind of knows we're the horn. And you might, the Twitter account is The Horn. Follow us, please. And go and like us and be our friend or neighbor or whatever on Facebook at The Horn. I think it's The Horn. All right, correct me, Betsy, if I'm wrong. Okay. So we've got that, out of the way. But it's definitely The Horn on Twitter. T-H-E-H-O-R-N. The Horn. That much I know I can, yeah. So we've got that going for us. Oh, goody, a bumper being sent in by Michael. A Nine Inch Nails bumper. We'll try to work that in later in the evening. Don't want to spoil the surprise. Let's go to the phones. You know the number, right? Jump in now. Best opportunity you're gonna have. Hey, welcome to the program,
Brother Bob.
Hey, Cossack, what's happening, man?
You, Bob. You. A couple of a couple of different things. First of all, when it comes to Maureen Chow, I wonder if she realizes that her type were considered and called niggers not that long ago.
You know, I was trying. Yeah, there. I was struck by the irony of a woman named Chow talking about the dark and dirty Tamils.
Yeah. And she's one of the inferior breeds also.
Well, within that whole white man's burden kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, you know, Jug of Punch has me really wondering if she's kin to Elaine.
Makes you wonder. Sure sounds like it.
Well, because Elaine Chao was, you know, that sort of elitist, yeah. What a Secretary of Labor she was, and much of.
God. But also, that whole story and the white man's burden and so forth hit rather close to home. We had a family friend who was an Indian, very fine gentleman, very well educated, well spoken, a normal Indian, and ended up committing suicide because the white girl that he had fallen in love with, her parents absolutely and categorically refused to allow her to marry one of those.
Yeah.
Which led to his suicide, which is a...
Jesus.
Like I said, he was a wonderful man. He really was. Very sweet, very intelligent, very well spoken. And yet, you know, this is the way he was treated. Like human awful. It's how do you do that, Bob? How do you treat a human being like that?
Well, the first thing you have to have in order to work up a really good bigotry is a profound degree of insecurity about yourself. And once you're over the insecurity hurdle, anything becomes possible. Because you have to have someone to look down upon in order to bolster your own flagging sense of self non-worth.
I don't know, that was a tune that just never got played in our house. It just didn't.
No, nor mine either. But believe me, there was a whole hallelujah chorus of it going on elsewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And still going
on. All around us. I mean, you can imagine how in the late 50s, early 60s, that just wasn't accepted. I mean, we had, literally, I remember, we had deputations of our neighbors coming to our house and telling us, in so many words, those people should not be coming to your home other than as servants. You are not supposed to have them over to parties and events at your place. It's just not done.
You're right. Well, you got to remember, I grew up in a neighborhood where my parents and the lady next door to us were the only two people who did not engage in white flight. By the time I left home, and to this day, it is deemed it's a black neighborhood.
Yeah.
But you know what? Never had any. Everybody else ran away. But my parents stood their ground and said, "Yeah, this is our house. We're not going to go." Because my parents were Depression-era people, Cossack.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, we bought this house. This is our house. And we are not going to, not for nobody are we going to incur more debt.
Right.
And, when I was a kid, I used to think, gosh, it'd be fun to, because all my friends, goodbye. And, it'd be nice to move out into one of the new subdivisions and stuff out by the mall. you know, bicycle distance from the mall. I played pinball all day long. And my parents would say, you know, no. This house is more than serviceable. It's got a bigger yard than the other new houses have. It's further away from the next door houses than those are. And it's ours.
Yeah.
All we got to do is keep the lights on and pay the property taxes, and we're good.
Well, the only
and reason... I didn't really understand it at the time, but now, especially, and I understand, you know, it gets a little freaky around here sometimes. And I get the emails and calls and things, and people say, you know, Bob, you got to get out of there. You know, fight the fight against mountaintop removal somewhere else. But you know, it's dangerous for you there. And, you know, with the telling folks about the hole in the gas tank and stuff, that I got another round of those. But, you know, here I am at the tender age of 48, and suddenly the wisdom of my parents is sort of shining through. I can't go, you know... I can't go somewhere else, because even though the roof leaks and everything else associated with living in a 80-year-old house, it's ours.
Yeah.
And well, as long as we pay the taxes, we're okay.
Now, the primary reason we ended up moving from D.C. was not white flight. It was the fact that we were renting this place. And in the suburbs, my parents actually got their own house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, it, you know, you can't just bug out.
No. Well, you know, the thing is, I remember when I was a kid, one of my next-door playmates came over, and, you know, I was real thrilled and said, gee, can I, you know, it looks interesting. Can I feel your hair? He said, sure. Oh, serious? Can I feel yours? I said, sure. You know, turn around, it's fair play. This is the kid I grew up with. This is my playmate.
Yeah.
I was 4 years old. You know, it's like, you know.
Well, some of us were more fortunate than others, Cossack. I don't know what it would be like to have grown up in the midst of, the outright hatred that both you and I witnessed. Just ick.
Well,
I mean, that's a talk about a burden on your soul. My God.
I mean, when I was in high school, I went out on a date with one of my classmates, and I got a shitstorm of bad reaction. Why? Because she happened to be black. So she was a classmate. She was a friend of mine.
No, but
crying out loud.
Yeah, but no. No, sorry. No.
What's wrong? What have I done wrong? What has she done wrong?
Well, you violated the whole social code. And it, you know, that damn thing was nearly 400 years old when you were violating it.
And she was getting crap from her side. I was getting crap from my side. What kind of sense does this make? You know, like I said, I go back to that comment I made to the Klansman around here that I was arguing with. Yeah, I was finally getting sick and tired of the argument. I said, you're right. I'm a racist. I belong to the human race. Which one do you belong to?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, Bob. I'm not into
it. You'd be surprised the number of people for whom that light does not go on.
Yeah, I'm not into interspecies dating, but, you know...
Well, you know, the
we're
Martians.
All, yeah, we're all part of the human race, for crying out loud.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it's as simple as that. I told you, didn't I, that I used to work way back when for Covington & Burling?
Yes.
And did I tell you how it was explained to me how companies deal with the IRS? Things called letter decisions. like the company in question will go to a firm like Covington Burling and say, we have this kind of a tax problem, solve it. And what they do is they will write up a letter to the IRS saying, well, we know that the law is this, but in this case, you know, we believe that we should be relieved from paying that particular tax because, and if you've got a good enough attorney, you get your ruling from the IRS saying, bingo, you're absolved, go and sin no more.
Right.
I mean, don't you wish you could do that? Don't you wish you could afford to do that?
Right.
Yeah.
But no, not so much.
But you have to get a real good shyster and have them go to the IRS and make your own little special law for your own little special case. And boom, suddenly, you know, you're off the hook from paying taxes for this particular matter.
Man, there must be just file after file of those letters from the likes of GE and Bank of America. And
oh, good God, yes.
Take up a warehouse.
Yeah.
And it all boils down to, well, you know, we just don't feel like paying taxes today. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay.
That's basically what it comes down to. And the thing is, Bob, these letter decisions become incorporated in the income tax code. That is why the damn code takes up something like 20.
Yeah, that's why it's ballooned the way it has.
Yeah. You know, why don't we have, you know, I agree. We need to redo taxes. You know, do away with things like letter decisions. If the law is the law, it's the law. Period. End of quotation.
Go back to the Nixon marginal tax rates.
Yeah. No,
we could probably be in pretty good shape with Nixon's marginal tax rates, couldn't we, Cossack?
Yeah. I'm still militating for Eisenhower, but, you know, it's just me.
Well, you're mean.
I'm an old fossil. You know, it wasn't that bad during the 50s. We built the interstate road system using those marginal tax rates.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, since we talked about it, did you watch Bourdain last night?
I only saw part of it. Unfortunately, I got laid out.
Yeah, I understood. It was quite good. And next week, God, I'm doing Bourdain's PR for him. Well, what the hell? next week, he goes to Kurdistan.
Ooh.
Across Iraq, you know, the works.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. But no, just seeing Chernobyl was heartbreaking. Heartbreaking.
It's a look into our future, Bob. Because it's not.
Well, to catch that news story today, now that, you know, it was couched in terms of, well, you know, don't worry, it wasn't much, it took a lot of really sensitive equipment and stuff, but I got a story from News Ninja Gene earlier today that the University of California, San Diego, did confirm that Fukushima radiation reached the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. The thing is, we're ignoring it. We're trying to ignore the fact that it's there. We're trying to ignore the fact this is going on. We're ignoring, you know, by not monitoring it, essentially. We're saying it doesn't exist. If you whistle past the graveyard, the boogeyman won't get you.
Right.
I mean, how ludicrous is that? You know, does any of this make any sense?
It's going to make an abundance of of sense in a sooner period of time than most people realize.
And, you know, to add insult to injury, we have to remember what happened in Fukushima is going to happen here. Not maybe. It is going to happen statistically. It is guaranteed that one of our reactors is going to spew. After all, it was Three Mile Island that started in England, if you'll remember.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen here. And what are we going to do? What if the reactor just outside of New York City blows?
Well, there's some all over this country. It's not even funny.
We're not even talking about Diablo Canyon in California.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, if the one just outside of New York City, about 40 miles outside of New York City, if that melts down, what are we going to do? How do you move 8 million people? Evacuate them where?
Well, you really can't. And Chernobyl, you know, Chernobyl proved that. You know, one of the things that the guide pointed out in the show last night was that Fukushima was, he tried to draw a distinction. He said Fukushima was a natural disaster, whereas the Chernobyl disaster was entirely man-made.
Correct.
And I got the idea that the Ukrainians really have no love lost for the Russians.
Depends.
I guess it's, there was a scene where Bourdain bought black market good caviar.
Uh-huh.
Because it's illegal in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, it depends. The do you remember the movie Taz Bulba?
Oh, yes.
With
Yul Brynner and Tony Curtis.
Correct.
Yonder lies the castle of my father. No.
This has been going on since before then. And it's the divide between Eastern Ukraine and Western Ukraine. Eastern Ukraine are basically Russians, for all intents and purposes.
And Western Ukraine ain't.
They have long ago thrown in their lot with the Poles. They consider themselves to be Western.
You know, I need to sit down and reread Taras Bulba. I wouldn't even mind to watch the movie again, campy and Technicolor as it was.
It was a good movie, yeah. And Yul Brynner was Russian anyway, so.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah. He left a he left part of his inheritance to the Russian church in San Francisco, the oldest Russian church.
I'll be darned, I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, you know, you look at it this way. The Russian church was different from the Catholic church in as much as it wasn't convert or die. It's a different philosophy.
Oh, yeah, and that goes all the way back. I mean, God, the schism and the back and the forth between various and sundry corrupt Byzantine emperors making promises to the Pope that, oh, we'll convert if you'll just send an army and run these, you know, these hordes off.
Well, for a long time, the Byzantine Empire was supporting the Western Empire until it fell completely.
Well, exactly, and it's our good friend Eugene Finnerman at FinnermanWorks.com who is such a, man, that guy, I mean, he knows Byzantine history. And fascinating to read. Cossack, it's good to hear from you, brother. And we'll get together again maybe when I get back from road tripping.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
And keep up the good fight, Bob. Somebody needs to do it.
Well, just trying.
and keep your head down.
Right, and watch for things on the ground. Right, head up, chin up, but head down. I got to figure out how that works, Cossack. It's like, well, today I went out and got a little $3 package of tank fix-it epoxy, and got under and cleaned up there on the gas tank and stuff, and really got a good look at what that thing looks like. And it's just surprising. I mean, apparently they made two attempts. There's a hole where it was failed, and then there's the one they got through. And so I'm waiting now. You know, you've got to mix the epoxy, and then the epoxy has to cure. And so I'm waiting to see if it's actually going to stick. Not betting yes.
They don't have the stuff that they have for tires, right?
No, where you plug the hole? No.
Yeah, you spray the goop in there and...
No, what I thought about doing was, and I tried it, but I sort of backed away from it, was to take a sheet metal screw with a slightly bigger diameter than the hole itself, and put a rubber gasket on that and some sealing stuff and screw that in. But then I got to worrying about the risk of splitting the plastic itself trying to do that.
No, that's true.
And then I really would have been screwed. So I just went with the epoxy, and I'm hoping for the best.
Okay.
Checking the brake lines, too.
I would do that. And I'm not joking, Bob. This is maybe paranoia, but I would look under the hood before you turn the key.
Oh, I have. I've turned the key several times.
But I
looked first. The only thing, the most dangerous thing I found under there, however, was a wasp nest.
That's bad enough. But.
They don't explode.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, for my short term in the Army and other places, it is not difficult to improvise something that will go boom rather well.
Don't give him any ideas, Cossack, please. You're not helping again.
Sorry. But no, I would just keep my eye out for that. You know? People are crazy. And they're getting increasingly so.
Yeah. All right, well, take care, Cossack, and have a good night, brother.
You too, Bob. Hugs and kisses to Agnes and the kids.
Sure thing. Talk to you later, man.
All
Bye.
Right, Bob. Bye-bye.
Cossack calling from behind the cornbread curtain in North Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Tracy!
Hey! Long time.
Well, it does seem like a long time.
It has been a minute, and I don't have much to say. I just wanted to, I didn't expect to get on. I just called, and, you know, I'm expecting my phone to die any minute because I am using an AT&T phone.
Oh, I got to tell you something about AT&T real fast before we go any further.
Oh, no.
Do you know that those rotten bastards gave something like $18,000 or more to Rick Perry?
$18,000?
Affirmative.
To Rick, good hair, that's the only thing that's good about him, Perry?
Right.
Demir-
oh, no, okay, here's, okay, you know, he's got that stupid book, the one that asserts that the Civil War was a matter of federal intervention.
See, you know, and I have to
they
say...
spent, AT&T you know, spent $18,000 buying that dumb damn book to give away.
Wow. Kind of like the Sarah Palin movie. Didn't they have to pay people to go and see it?
At this point, they may be.
Well, I have to admit that in the last...
Oh, no. Are you there, Tracy? I don't think this is me. Tracy. See what happens? See what happens when you talk about AT&T? It's happened here before. But yeah, AT&T gave $18,000 to Rick Perry to buy his bullshit book. The one that has all the crazy stuff in it. Like Social Security is a cruel Ponzi scheme. So I guess, and you know, there's no getting around it. When we go out and we do remote stuff where we need wireless access, yeah, it's an AT&T phone. I can't go to Verizon because Verizon sucks too. They're trying to screw over 45,000 workers. Don't send me emails saying, Bob, go to Credo. Credo doesn't serve this little corner of West Virginia. Okay. Anyway, I guess in a way I helped pay for those $18,000 worth of idiotic books. Don't make me feel real good, I have to say. I mean, this is a guy who accused Ben Bernanke of treason? Mother McCree. Let's see if we pick Tracy back up. Are you?
Okay.
That's
me. I love it when I'm just talking and I'm like, oh God, I'm talking to air.
Well, that happened to Juanita last night, so don't feel bad. Happens okay, to me all the time. I don't even have to be behind the microphone.
Remember, we have AT&T, both of us, right?
Yeah.
That means that, you know, at any given moment, we could just be both talking to air. But what I was saying that I've been in a virtual news vacuum, news void. It's not that I don't care, but I think it's been like kind of a sensory overload.
Right.
And I've just kind of been like reading, you know, finishing up the stuff that, you know, I've been doing kind of scary reading because, like I said, I'm reading the Shock Doctrine and I'm reading Cornel West's book, you know, Race Matter. I haven't just been like, and today, yeah, I was in the middle of a police standoff.
What?
I kid you not. I mean, I have...
You weren't the cause of it, I trust.
No. Actually, it was not my fault this time.
Okay, behaving yourself. Good. That's the first step.
I had to behave myself. No, they were not after me, but I was. I had just dropped off. It was hilarious. I was helping out this lady. Do you guys have anything in West Virginia, like access, where they pick up people and take them to their various, like, doctor's appointments and just visit family and stuff like that?
No, not really.
Okay, well, out here we have what they call access. And basically it's a service. They pay like $2.50, and we take them wherever, anywhere from, you know, 20 miles to 50 miles or what have you. But anyway, I picked up this lady who was rather large, okay? And it took me 10 minutes to get her in the car, and then we get to her house, and it took me, seriously, I mean, did you ever see Harlem Nights?
Yes.
Okay, so you, and because when I'm helping the car, Bob's fellow, I couldn't get her balanced, and so I almost lost my footing, and she almost fell on me, and all thing I could think of is hearing Red Fox's voice in the back, watch out quick, you're fucking with a heavyweight.
Hey, that's two nights in a row of Red Fox references.
Seriously?
Yeah.
So... the only thing I could see myself in every fat movie from The Clumps to Norbert and all that, her falling on me and my arms flailing about get from under this big woman. So 10 minutes, I finally got the car, I'm heading on this pickup, and I'm heading on Vermont and the 101, and all of a sudden I see all these cop cars flying around me. Like, it was seriously out of the scene of a movie. Well, you know how when they're chasing somebody and they open the doors and the cars are still running and they get out guns drawn? Yeah.
Ooh.
Guns.
Get down. Get down.
And basically there was nothing I could do. If they had, I mean, and this went on for a good 10 minutes before they finally gave up. So apparently what had happened was that earlier this morning there was a robbery over in Koreatown somewhere. And I guess these were the suspects. Now, okay, so if you're going to rob a store or whatever, shouldn't you, if you're going to use a getaway, a nondescript vehicle, you would think.
You would think, yeah, was, right.
Okay, so you ready for what color? It was like a rust, bright orange, somewhere between rust and orange.
Oh, that new copper color that's so popular. Yeah.
Yes. That color.
I love that color.
But you wouldn't, if you were going to rob somebody,
No, really. It's not a good, it's not a good bank robbing getaway car. No.
You know, and it was a brand new car. Because I'm like, it's.
Well, it probably stole that, too.
It probably stole that, too. And so they, you know, finally come out the car and they, you know, they get out the car and they do the backup thing. And so I'm like right next to the getaway car. I'm like, there's a cop car, my car, and the getaway car. And like I said, Bob, the only thing I could think of was like, if they start shooting, I'm done. Because there was nowhere I could go. So as they finally get them out the car and everything, and as I'm driving by, I'm shaking. I have lived and managed to live in Los Angeles for 45 years and have never been near a car chase, a police shootout, a bank robbery, or any of those other things that, you know, that you see when you turn on the news that happens in L.A. I have avoided that successfully. I was really freaked out because the only thing I could think of was, like, what if they start shooting? But fortunately, they did not. But as I'm driving, once they got them out the car, they're searching the car, and as I'm driving by, they're pulling out weapons.
Out of the car.
Out of the car. Out of the getaway car.
Ooh.
I'm like, oh, my God.
No, LAPD gets a little touchy about that.
Yeah, you know, they don't like it when, I mean, I kid you not, I have never seen anything like that in my, you know, in the entire time I've lived in L.A. You know, the closest I've ever come to anything like that is, you know, when you watch the police chases on the news. And the end result. But I'm at home. You know, nowhere near it. Yeah, it was pretty scary. But other than that, the best thing about this week is coming up is that I'm going to Vegas.
Oh, fun.
And then the following weekend.
If you're going to take cabs in Vegas, you got to find Tony.
No, I don't take cabs. I rent a car when I go to Vegas.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
I stay off strip, so it's just a hassle for me to, you know, find a cab, get a cab. Because if I stayed at one of the strip hotels,
yeah,
it would be okay. But no, I always stay off strip. I'm you know, on the cheap side.
So what's a Vegas vacation like for Tracy?
A Vegas vacation for Tracy consists of eating and going to shows and eating. And
well, I can highly suggest that you stay the heck away from the buffet at the Rio.
Is it bad?
They advertise it big time, but wow, it was not impressive.
You know who else said it? I got this because since I live in L.A., every Sunday we get a insert in the Sunday Times on Vegas. And they do, like, every week is something different. And they did the top, you know, five buffets and stuff. Now, Rio was one of them. So now that means they're lying.
Well, no, I mean, it's a big deal. But, I mean, it just didn't strike me as being anything I was going to write home about. And God almighty, it was $35 a pop.
Yes, see, that's what I'm saying. You know, like, I went, my friend who's a local lives there. And she took, we did a all-you-can-eat sushi down on the other side of Vegas. Buffet. Well, actually, it wasn't a buffet. It was an all-you-can-eat sushi, and they have a Sunday brunch. And you know, normally how you do Sunday brunch, you got to get up and, you know, pick your food. No, they bring you your they do little orders, and so they bring you your food. So it was $18, and it's some of the best sushi I've ever had. And then they had like French toast with Hawaiian bread French toast.
Oh, yummy! Oh, that's just crazy.
It was just stupid good. So, you know, I go to eat and drink, and there's
well, what shows are you going to take in?
I'm going to go see Jersey Boys.
That'll be fun.
I'm going to go see Jersey Boys, and I might go see George Wallace. Have you ever seen him perform?
Only on TV.
If you ever go to Vegas, because Vegas is not like one of my favorite places to go, but I got a good deal, so what the hell? But Bob, George Wallace is just, I've only seen him the one time a few years ago, but the one joke that stood out was he was talking about people with gas cans, right? He's like, okay, so why do you need a gas can? There's a gauge on the car that says it's either E or F. If it gets to E, then why do you not stop to get gas before it goes past the E? He's like, you're habitual. You have a problem because if you cannot figure out that you need to get gas before the car, the little level reaches E, you shouldn't be driving. He's one of those people that is just like, you know, common sense kind of thing. Like, you know, when you're looking for your keys and you're going, why can't I find my keys? And he's like, well, when you came in the house, do you have to go to the bathroom? So check your front door, because more than likely, your keys are still hanging out the front.
This, of course, see, I'm the living embodiment of the exceptions to rules.
Okay.
I'll be carrying a gas can in the vehicle for a while.
Right.
Just in case if the epoxy patch falls off, there's no point. But I can.
What is this about the epoxy? Is something happening with your gas?
Somebody poked a hole in it.
Are you really seriously?
Yeah, you want me to send you a picture?
Please, oh my God, are you kidding? Does it? Okay, see, this is where it comes into. Really, seriously, do you not have? Do people? I can't even talk because I can't even wrap my head around the fact that somebody deliberately poked a hole.
Well, if you saw this thing, you would see how deliberate it was.
So it wasn't like you were driving and a rock jumped up?
No, these modern plastic gas tanks are pretty sturdy. They'll take, they're hanging right there in the undercarriage of the vehicle. They'll take some rocks banging up.
So somebody delivered?
No, this is a straight line hole, pretty as a picture. And there's another one just like it where they tried the first time but couldn't get it done.
So this happened, where did this happen, on your property?
Yeah.
What do you live in?
Well, the neighborhood is not the word. I live in the country.
Oh, right. Well, I had a customer that I picked up a few months back, and she's from L.A., but she moved to Arizona to take care of her mother. And apparently, she drove her car out there with her Obama-Biden stickers on it. Yeah, somebody broke out her window.
Yeah. I used to have... I've had Obama stickers. I couldn't keep a Friends of the Mountain sticker on. It would be torn off.
See, you know, if people put this much energy into doing good instead of evil, could you imagine what kind of...
But see, they're getting, you know, these assholes get $60,000 a year for being evil. So they're not interested in good.
Right. See, you know, as people... It's so funny because, like I said, I have seriously said last Wednesday, I think that was the last, because I was working in the airport. That's my last time we spoke. And you weren't on Thursday, and Friday I was in a coma. So I missed you on Friday. So I have not been around. But, like, it's just so many evil people. And, I mean, like, I almost.
But it only takes one.
See, what scares me is when your evilness intrudes upon my life, because like I said this afternoon, I'm surrounded I'm in the middle of a police standoff. What did I do? Nothing. But because of somebody else's evilness, I could have got, if, like I said, Bob, I guess, like I said, what freaks me out is the fact that if they had started shooting, there was nowhere I could go. By police cars and like right, you know, within shot, there was, if it would have been, do you remember, I'm pretty sure back when it happened, the North Park bank robbery shootout?
Oh, yeah.
It was just that many cop cars, if not more, surrounding these people. And
see, there's something there. If you have never heard a shot fired in anger, if you've never heard that sort of angry, angry yellow jacket on steroids noise, you know, by your head. That's a different thing.
I don't get freaked out. I drive a cab in L.A., and I've been in some hairy
situations where, you know, the sweat beads over your upper lip and that one trickle of sweat down the side of your face and down your neck and stuff like that. And but I was in kind of in control of the situation. I was not in control of that situation.
No.
And
no.
And it's like, wow. And like, it's because people are so fucking evil that they're, you know, like, what's happening with your, you know, with the mountaintop removal and all the, and they're just, and they're being, and they're, see, the problem is they're profiting from their evil. And so they have, because there's no profit in good anymore. You know, doing the right thing. I picked up some teachers and we had a really great conversation to the point that she works for NASA now and she wants me to be her, you know, kind of like her personal driver because she does a lot of traveling, but she's, you know, she's like, I don't understand how they demonize teachers, how it's the teacher's fault that teachers and firefighters and policemen and all these public servants, these people who are dedicated, they have dedicated their lives in order to serve other people. This is what they do. And you're demonizing them. It's their fault that we're in a recession. Because they have the nerve to have pensions and they're in the union, so it's their fault, right?
Yeah, bad people.
They're horrible.
It's like our buddy Tosh pointed out that, you know, when they keep talking about budget cuts, what I mean, and we've just been left in the dust on this, what they really mean is they want more people to be out of work. Because these simple minded little teabaggers, Tracy, I guess they just think that there's some room in Washington that's just full of money that's sitting around not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't imagine, and because they're teabaggers, you know, they bring their racism to the table too. And
you mean teabaggers are racist?
Upon my word.
Like us is black.
Right, exactly. We've got to cut the deficit. Shut up. Because they're talking about putting people out of work, and they are putting people out of work, and the number of people in government that they have put out of work is a big chunk of the unemployment problem in this country. The unemployment problem, the unemployment numbers would be significantly lower if it weren't for all the government workers who have been given the Apple and Roadmap treatment and sent on down the road.
Well, it's like my baby brother, who when he was young, we used to just figure that we were just going to have to keep bail money on the ready, you know? Because he was just, I don't know what it was, but finally, I don't know if it, once he got, this is how bad it was. I used to, because he's 16, 17 years younger than me. I used to have to go to parent-teacher conferences because my mother had to go to work. And, you know, the hours that she worked was, you know, it got to the point that I was doing the parent-teacher conferences. One day, my brother decided that, my mother got a letter from, or a call from one of my brother's teachers. Always, it was like it's a period either after nutrition or lunch. And he was like always filling in like 15 minutes late every day, right? One day my mother showed up and she just sat in the class. And that sure enough, that was the day that my brother decided not to come to class on time.
Oops.
And I've told you so. My mom's straight up old school. You know, she'll beat you in public and don't care.
Grab you by the ear type, you know, yeah.
So I would have paid money because you could imagine. So he's strolling in 15 minutes late from lunch or what have you. And there's my mom sitting in the front row or sitting in the front row or basically sitting at his desk.
Oh, how nice you could join us. Yeah.
You know. So from what the, you know, of course there's various versions of the story, but my mom's version is basically he snatched him by the collar and drug him out of the classroom, or did she suck him in his chest right there? Have you ever heard that Richard Pryor joke when he's talking about how he tried to raise up on his daddy?
Yeah. Yeah, you mean, I'd be getting that bass out of my voice if I was you. Right, that one?
And his dad socked him in his chest.
and his chest caved in or frowned his father's fist. So every time his father moved his arm, Richard Pryor
moves. He wasn't going to let go of that fist.
Right, and that's basically kind of the same situation that my brother was in. But the thing is, it's like, but see, his teacher cared about him. But long story short, not only did my brother finally get himself together, he graduated from high school with honors. He came out here, because my mom by this time had moved to North Carolina. He came out here and moved in with me for a while, went to Valley College, transferred with honors, graduated from Berkeley. And guess what
wow.
he does?
What?
He's a teacher.
Beautiful.
Because, and on top of that, he teaches at a continuation school in Oakland.
That is doing, no, that, see, that's doing God's work.
He's doing God's work. To the point that these kids who nobody cared about or gave up on, some of them are even considering graduating from high school and possibly going on to college. But because his principal doesn't like him, he kind of got blackballed and he got a pink slip. So he's, yes, one of the many teachers in California, in the state of California, whose education system used to, you know, rival any, you know, like I said, we used to be the Golden State. People used to move out here.
The gold standard.
Because of our public school, not private.
Yeah, Prop 13 took care of all that.
Prop 13 just demolished the California education system.
But you know that, and I'm glad you mentioned educational issues, Tracy, because tucked away in my stacks this evening are a couple of just stunning little exemplars. You know, the right wing and the jihadists. Yeah, they're waging jihad
like
against.
That.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
Who came up with that? Was that a toaster?
I first saw it at Matt Osborne's blog, and
okay.
Osborne Inc. OSBORNEINK.com. But one of the things they hate. Yeah, one of the things they hate more than anything is public education. You know. Rick Goodhair, nothing else good about him, Perry, has said, and this is a quote, "I don't think the federal government has a role in education."
Yeah, and you, he's the one of those idiots that believes in homeschooling, right?
Oh, sure. And, you know, he tried to put some distance between him and George W. Dimwit by saying, George and I are very different people. George went to Yale. I went to Texas A&M.
Yeah,
but they were both D students at their respective mediocre colleges.
Mediocre at best. If George's father hadn't had any money to buy his way through college, how many buildings did the Bushes have to build in order for George W. to get a degree?
Well, yeah, and see, there's another thing. There's the gentleman's D. Once you get into, so I've been told, I don't have this, this is not my own personal experience by any stretch of the imagination, but once you get in, if you get through your freshman year in an Ivy League school, they will bust their ass to keep you from failing.
Really?
And so, had George W. Bush actually gone to, say, Penn State or West Virginia University or University of Texas, he might very well have flunked out because state colleges don't have time for that crap. And they will flunk you out in your senior year.
Without blinking an eye, it's like, you're stupid. We'll keep taking your money, but we get to the, they'll put you on academic probation and all that.
And there's a little bit of that at Texas A&M because it's so militaristic. That's just thugs.
No, really?
That's what they turn out.
Texas, don't they have are those the Aggies?
Yes, those are the Aggies.
Why do I know that?
I
find that. Why?
Yeah, well, that's disturbing that you do. But no, these right wingers, they have a real sense of hatred for education. And on the one hand, I saw a video today from Brave New Films about the Koch brothers funding resegregation in Wake County, North Carolina. Not desegregation, resegregation.
Oh.
And it's pretty damn sickening. But then the bookend to that story is the story of a woman. Oh God, I'm going to get her name. Give me just a minute here.
I made it home so we could take your time. I signed in to Skype last night in for a minute because it was like 1 o'clock in the morning and I was still working. And one of the guys, Lee, was saying that he could always tell when I'm driving, when I'm talking to you. He's like, it reminds him of Kevin Klein in A Fish Called Wanda.
No, this other story is the story of Kelly Williams Bowler. She's from Ohio.
Here we go.
Yeah. The story got legs a few months back when it first broke. She was recently, and she was charged. Well, now she's been sentenced. Oh. Kelly Williams Bowler will serve 10 days in jail, and she will do 3 years probation.
Why?
Because she sent her kids to a school district where they didn't live. She sent her children to a school district where the schools were better and less violent.
How dare she? That evil, conniving bitch.
She would have gone to a school district that served the projects in Akron, Ohio, but instead she sent them to their father's township of Copley, Ohio.
There was somebody... a parent lived in that area.
Right.
So what does she? So what? How does she break the law? If there's somebody,
they hung her. They hung $30,500 in reparations on her because that was the amount of money that she allegedly. The court determined that she stole from the school system by sending her children to it.
See,
10 days in jail, 3 years probation, $30,000 hanging over her head that has interest racking on it, compounded, and that she will never be able to. She was almost done, Tracy. She was almost done with her teaching degree.
No!
But now she's got a felony rap sheet, and she can never be a teacher.
That's just wrong on...
I don't have to tell you what color she is, right?
Korean?
No.
Well... one day we'll have to sit down and talk about my foray into the criminal and justice system. I'm one of those unfortunate souls that has the felony, no fault of my own. It's only because I did not have a good lawyer. And I was convicted, wait for it, even though I reported my income and did everything I was supposed to do, I was convicted of welfare fraud. Guess how long I was on probation, Bob?
5 years?
10.
10 years?
It was supposed to be 5. I did the 5 years. I, did my community service. And basically, a debt that you'll never be able to pay. Because I did what I was supposed to do. And if I had a real attorney instead of a public pretender, there's no way those charges. I was an office manager at a Department of Defense company. But
ooh.
Guess what? Because I had a felony, guess what?
Goodbye.
Lost my job. Goodbye. So anyway,
So
isn't America's punishment fetish just a joy to behold?
Yeah. So I did the 5 years probation. Like I was told, they said even if you don't pay it back, as long as you do your community service and you've made an effort, you know, because, see, not only was I an office manager, I was a tax preparer for H&R Block. Can't be a tax preparer if you have a felony because I can't get bonded.
Oh, hell no.
So I lost, you know, at the time I was probably making about $60,000, $70,000 a year, and this was in 1990s money, by the way.
Oh, that was large money.
Yeah, that was large money. So anyway, I go to court. I'm thinking I'm about to get taken off of probation, right? The woman before me that the judge saw now was a white woman. She had never done any of her community service, hadn't even attempted to pay back any of the money because she had been convicted of welfare fraud also. But he took her off of probation. I'm thinking, okay, but right before he was going to hear my case, my public defender had to go do another case. So by the time she came back, it was like 5 or 6 later, and the judge was, you know, has heard and listened to all the bullshit. So then when it came my turn, he slapped on 5 more years probation.
Son of a...
Oh, it gets better.
I mean, you didn't get all Angela Davis in there.
No. I'm just sitting there, you know, I had never encountered anything. I didn't know what to do. And so, you know, so when he told, I snapped. I just started, you know, I just kind of, my whole world just shut down. I kid you not. I shut completely down. And then like a month or so later, my grandmother died, and I was supposed to go back. And so I totally blocked the situation out, Bob. I kid you not. This was in, because I got convicted in 99, so this was in 2004. So so a whole year goes by. I never, like I said, I just totally, it's not like I blew it off. I just, what is that when, you know, your mind just, how it deals with things, and it just pretends like it never happened. And basically, that's basically what happened. So a year goes by, and I never went back to court because it's like I had blocked the whole thing out until I'm driving down the street in Hollywood, and I got pulled over.
Ding.
And it clicked. I'm like, and I was like, holy Christ. And I was with a friend of mine, and she's like, what? I said, I'm going to jail. And she's like, for what? It's just a traffic violation. You know, you have insurance and a valid license, right? I'm like, yeah. But a year ago, I was supposed to go back to court, and I never went to court. Now, it was a two-cop situation. There's a white cop and an Asian cop. The Asian cop was going to let me go because he's like, if you've been, nobody's coming got you, obviously it's no big deal, just go to court Monday because this was on a weekend.
Yeah.
Right? And he's like, but the white cop's like, no. So he pulls me out the car, guns drawn, makes me sit on the sidewalk, spread eagle, in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard, pretty much.
Jesus Christ.
You know, and this was like a Saturday, so I get arrested. The good thing, the Asian cop was so cool, because he let my friend, because, you know, they could have impounded my car.
Oh, yeah, that would have been, yeah, double fun.
You know, but the Asian cop, because he was not, because he couldn't go against his partner, but he did say, well, at least let her friend drive the car home. So she, and plus she had my purse. So, you know, because you know stuff comes up missing.
Right.
When it goes to, you know, your locker or whatever. So basically, and I took all my jewelry off and gave it to her. So I got arrested, and I spent the weekend in, here's the best part. They arrested me in Hollywood, but they didn't have any facilities for women in Hollywood. So we had to go to Van Nuys jail. They drove right past my house. So I'm like, you know, can you just drop me off here? So I spent the weekend in jail. That Monday morning, they transported me to Twin Towers. And long story short, I spent 13 days in jail.
Jesus.
Because, you know, and I became... very much acquainted with the, you know, more so with the criminals. I survived it, though. I almost got into a couple of fights and stuff, but I got out because the asshole DA was trying to make me do, you know, spend 90 days in jail. And fortunately, my public pretender said, look, you know, she already did 5 years probation. And I basically told the judge, he's like, well, why didn't you? I said, because, Your Honor, I was told that I, as long as I did my 5 years and blah, 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 I was going to be off of probation. And when you gave me 5 more years probation, and then within a month of that, my grandmother died, I went into a horrible depression because I couldn't understand what was happening with my, you know, I lost everything when this first happened. And I finally thought I was going to, this monkey was going to be off my back. And then 5 more years. So, yeah, I had 10 years probation for welfare fraud. And so whenever I hear about these, like the banksters and Wall Street fools, and all,
yeah, you really can't stomach that very well, can you?
No. Because what am I guilty of? Taking care of my child? I didn't have a Cadillac. The car that I was driving actually was my dad's car, who had died. So that's the only reason why I had a vehicle. You know, so it's just when I hear about these people who don't want to pay taxes, who have robbed this country blind, and because of them, you know, and like Enron and you know, name.
Well, you know, Rick Perry says you're not paying enough taxes.
Right. So, and when I hear about these people, and then I think about the hell that I went through for, are you ready for this? For how much? Oh, I forgot to mention that. $4,000? But they said it was more than that.
You know what? I'm glad that you can talk about this with as good an attitude as you manifest, Tracy, because...
Oh, no, I still have night terrors.
I don't doubt it. But the fact of the matter is, we don't talk enough about these realities, because when something like this is happening to you, you feel like you are the only lonely, small, still little voice on the whole damn planet that it's happening to. And the isolation that comes with that is enough to crush you. But people, let me just say, Tracy, that people are benefiting right now from hearing your story, because somebody somewhere out there right now, there is somebody who feels like they are a tiny little molecule isolated in the universe, and the whole universe is peeing on them.
Yeah, don't tinkle down economics on me and tell me that it's raining.
Right, but you know what? They're not alone, and you've just proven it, and you've proven that you that rotten things happen to decent people.
But decent, I mean, like I said, Bob, it keeps...
Look, Warren Buffett at least came out and said, hey, tax my class. We're severely undertaxed. But the fact of the matter is, whether it's Rick Perry or Warren Buffett or Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or any of these other titans of industry, they do not know what hard work is, Tracy, until they see the hard work of being poor.
And it's being poor.
I mean, you have to be creative. You have to be dedicated. You have to be absolutely doggedly determined to survive.
And you have to do things that you would under any other circumstance. I talk about how...
You have to abase yourself. You have to bow and scrape.
Bow and scrape and go out with men that you would never be seen with in public. But if they take you out to dinner, that means I get a doggy bag so I can bring it home to my son.
There you go.
Do you know, I mean, I'm trying to keep it together because when I talk about it, I try not to cry. But, oh, fuck, I'm going to cry. But it's that anger, because it's like, how dare you put me through this? I was only trying to take care of my child.
And somewhere along the way, that existential conversation is going to happen inside Kelly Williams Bowler's mind, too.
I was trying to take care of my son. That's the only thing
I'm guilty of, and you put me in jail because of that. You didn't say, Miss Porter, if you don't pay this money back, did you give me a chance to eat? I was making $70,000 a year. Don't you think I could have paid that back? But you put a felony on me. You make me a criminal because I'm a woman and I'm black and I didn't know my rights. I didn't know what I could do to keep this from happening to me. And I'm not a stupid person. So if it's happening to me and I'm an educated person, what happens to the people who aren't? What happens to the people that don't have a chance, that never had a chance? I had a chance, and they, look, you know, do you know how hard it was for me to even have a chance? And they took it away from me. Those bastards. And then you have these assholes like Rick Perry cutting education, you know, making, cutting programs to help women like that in the same situation that I was in and all that and whatnot and so forth. And you call yourself an American. You call yourself a Christian. I'm sorry.
Don't you dare apologize.
You call yourself a Christian. How dare you say that you love your fellow man and you could treat people the way these people are treating people? It's sick. It's twisted.
See, we have a criminal injustice system, Tracy, that is predicated on doing nothing but grinding the poor. There is no justice involved with it whatsoever.
No.
It takes advantage and sadistically punishes poor people and ignorant people. And when it becomes, you were poor but not ignorant. And there are people who are ignorant but not poor. But when you get that, when you get the combination of poor and ignorant, dear God, it's a perfect storm.
It's like somebody asked me what parts of town do I not like to drive in? I said Koreatown because it's a perfect storm. And Tim, don't get mad, but you have Asians, do you have Hispanics, and you have a really tight area. And it's a perfect storm for total mayhem because nobody's got to drive over me. It's awful. It is awful.
And even in the midst of it all, you find a way to laugh.
It's so, because it's like this has been going on now. You know, like I said, I finally got off of probation in 2009. So I've been off of probation. No, I'm sorry. I just got off of because I didn't come back to court. So I was supposed to be off of probation in 2009, but I didn't get off of probation until 2010. And like I said, I think about these assholes who will never, just the crimes against humanity, just what some of these people have done in Iraq and Afghanistan. Let's forget about the money.
Oh, yeah, and you did notice, you might have noticed a little news story earlier today. The White House said, well, we would be open to staying in Iraq longer if they ask us nicely.
Oh, God, see, you know, this is why, you know, and I know Tim is like, this is why I don't believe in God. Don't, you know, above it, through it all, I still believe in God.
So did Anne Frank.
I still believe in Jesus. I still, because see, that, trust me, those 13 days in jail, if I didn't have that faith and that hope that only comes from that belief in the Lord, I wouldn't have made it through. I would not have made, and trust me, and with the depression and everything that I have gone through, I still, you know, I'm still here. It's like, remember the movie The Color Purple?
Oh, yes.
And her, you know, I may be black, I may be a woman, I may even be ugly, but I'm here. Dear Lord, I'm still here.
Exactly.
And no matter what you say,
no matter how much you grind. I mean, I have been ground into the dirt I am just now clawing my way out of oblivion, out of this. I call it the abyss. I was in a quagmire, and I'm just now beginning to see the light. And what's keeping me relatively sane, I'm not totally sane, relatively sane, is because of shows, listening to people like you and Mike Malloy and, you know, and the tweets that I get and the information that I get. Because you know why? Because there's hope out there. There is, we are not giving up. And if somebody like me who has never given a damn about politics or anything like that can get up and wants to start to blog and to maybe have my own radio show just to get the message out, because we cannot give up. I gave up for 10 years, Bob. I laid on my couch literally for 5 years. To this day, I don't know how I raised my son at times. I did at one point have to send him away to live with my mom because I did not want him to see me in the state that I was in. And I did not want to see some of the things that I did not want him to see some of the things that I had to do to survive. I wanted him to be away from that. And I have the most magnificent son. If you ever come to California, you got to come. We have to get together because I want you to meet my boy. He is the light of my life. You know, my birthday was last month, and he wrote me the most beautiful card. Actually, I have it, and it's just, you know, you're a parent, so you always think that your kids don't care or that you just think you're a rotten parent.
Yeah.
My son wrote, "I love you more than you'll ever know. You are the reason I am the man that I am. I am so proud and happy to have you, the best mom. Love," he puts in parentheses, I mean in quotation marks, "the bad seed."
Oh, that's so funny you that would come up because a long time ago, Tracy, our two youngest, Doodle and Ferg, who are 14 and 15 now, back when...
The one that fell off the tree?
Yes. Back when Disney's Hercules came out, there were two little demons named Pain and Panic.
Right.
Well, their nicknames became Pain and Panic. And they go at each other like cats and dogs. And just the other day, we were sitting over wings or something, and I looked at him and Ferg said something about, "I'm the bad seed." And Doodle said, "No, I'm the bad seed." And I chimed in and said, and pointed at Ferg, "And you're the black sheep." So they've gone from Pain and Panic to bad seed and black sheep.
Well, of course, the bad seed is one of my favorite all-time movies.
Oh, yeah.
Did you kill a little boy with them shoes?
Tracy, dear, this has been moving, and it has been amazing. And I thank you for your openness and your honesty and your integrity.
I don't even know where that came from.
But you're a believer, so you know better than to ask, because there's that verse in there that says, sometimes when we don't even know what to ask for, the soul cries out in a language of its own.
In a language of its own. And I think it has something to do with that. I've been up for 24 hours straight.
That's a little rough, too. By the way, you got fan mail.
Oh, no.
Tim, dear Tracy, I love you. I think he's still just trying to get his bedroom back.
He is.
Michael writes in, who has occasionally been Kid A in the chat room.
Okay.
He says, it's people like Tracy, real people, that are the reason I'm a liberal. I don't know how tea crackers and conservatives sleep at night. Maybe that's why they fetishize Jesus, to get to sleep. I have no problem with folks who believe or love or admire Christ just as the fundies who fetishize him but ignore the meaning. I'm rambling, says Michael, but I knew you were going to tell Tracy sternly not to apologize for losing it, and you did, and I'm so glad. Michael closes saying, we're all in this together. Peace.
I tell you,
I've been at this for a few years now. You don't know, Tracy. You will never know. You can't know. It is impossible to know. But the people who form the Horn family touch lives and change lives. And if this little internet experiment is a vehicle by which that can happen, then it is supposed to be here.
It's supposed to be because my you know what my greatest dream is, considering my life experience, is that another woman would never, or man, anybody, a parent, would never have to go through what I have gone through. And what, and I'm sorry, what was the lady's name in Ohio who's on probation because of why she wanted to send her children to a better school? And how...
And that's not the only case. There's another case up in New England that's the same case. And that woman is going to be tormented.
Because she wanted... See, there has to be people. There has to be lawyers. There has to be somebody out there that can help people like her. I mean, people like me. People... Because... Nobody should go through that, and not because I mean.
But the whole system, the whole system is rigged, Tracy. You know, you referenced your public defender.
No, I said public pretender.
Well, yes, I was being generous. But those folks are usually the ones who come out of law school with the highest of good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want to go to work carrying some pyramid scheme law firm's senior partner's briefcase for 5 years.
Right.
They want to get out there and try to do good within the law. There's a famous quote from Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. He was a cocaine freak, by the way, who said, it is possible to live greatly in the law.
It is.
And so what happens is these people go into things like public defender services, legal aid,
the Liberties Union, and you know, blah,
and they make bupkis for
nobody,
a very,
and they still got,
and they get a caseload that is legal malpractice by its very definition, because they can never give the time to any given case that needs to be given to it. They've just got to move it through the system. You know, they're dealing cards.
But see, on top of the fact is, they're all working. They all get their paychecks from the same people. The public pretenders, the DA, the sheriff, the judge, they all work for the county of Los Angeles. And not to say, like you said, there aren't good public defenders out there. There are.
But it is a system that is designed to fail, because at the very bottom end, at the end of all analysis, the criminal injustice system in the United States is designed not to afford justice, not to mete out mercy when it's called for, but to grind on poor people, ignorant people, and desperate people, and people who have fallen through the cracks of society, so that the rest of America can look at them and go, well, there but for the grace of God go I. Aren't I a wonderful person?
But the problem with that attitude, because see, with the way the economy is going and the way and these laws that are being written, because seeing that these are private, they have to make a profit, and the only way you can make a profit is if you have people in the beds, yes?
In the beds, and you're not feeding them, and the way you make profits on for-profit prisons is by cutting corners on services, which means that if they manage to successfully serve their time, they will go back out on the streets and be back in, because they didn't... The whole concept of rehabilitation is just so...
It's gone.
That's so 1960.
That's so... I mean, because at least back in the day... Depending on the offense, you had the option. If you were, you know, a certain age and the judge, because if it hadn't been for a judge sending my aunt was screwing up, and he's like, okay, you have one of two options, jail or the army. she went into the Army and she did quite well.
Yeah.
But at least back then, though, if you went into jail, they taught you a trade. You could go to school and get your education. You could come out.
Well, if you've ever seen the Shawshank Redemption, you know, there's that one scene where the old guy, played by James Whitmore, finally gets out of the joint, and they put him up in a cheap apartment, hotel room, whatever, halfway house. And, yeah, he says, I don't think I'm going to stick around. And he hangs himself.
Exactly. Red was here.
Because...
Morgan Freeman's character. Morgan's like, I ain't going out like that. Morgan went to...
But you know what? We live in a culture where that's okay.
Because if you don't have any... If you outlive your usefulness, I mean... The whole world passed him by.
Right, but the thing that's important to note, Tracy, is that that attitude that we have long taken for people who transgress the rules of society, that attitude is being transferred over into people who have never done anything wrong and merely have the misfortune of being of having lost a job in this disastrous economic collapse.
Well,
you know, 44 million people out of 300 million in the United States, 44 million have been on unemployment compensation at some time in the last not many years.
No. And see, my point about the privatizing of the prisons is because now they're talking about, you know, putting people in jail because of they're in debt.
Yeah.
So now we're going to have the rise of debtors' prisons.
Yeah, it's already happening. We talked about that at some length long before you started listening. Started down in Florida, and it's
Florida?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, really, it's rolling right along. Tracy, thank you so much. I know there are people that want to speak to what you have spoken to in these last few minutes.
Speak truth.
There we go. We will. I won't be here tomorrow through Friday, but I'll be back Monday, and we'll keep it going.
Oh, goody, so I can call you on my last day in Vegas so you can see if I'm still sober.
Yes. And if you're not, that'll be okay, too.
That's okay because I'm flying, so I'm not driving, so it's okay.
There you go. Oh, and by the way, Ron in Raleigh wrote a little bit ago to tell you, he said, the best subs in Vegas are Boston Subs. There are a couple of locations on the Strip.
Nice.
Always good to have. Nice. And you know what? Before you go, watch the Anthony Bourdain No Reservations episode about Vegas. There's some potential
now,
there if you want to lay down some coin.
What station is he on? Because
well, he's on the Travel Channel, but if you go and look on YouTube, you'll find him. And all of his stuff's on Netflix, too.
Okay. Excellent. And, of course, I'm trying to – it's so fun. You know what? Could you put me on hold so I could just listen to this?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I cannot seem to, you know me and technology, and I know I'm supposed to be able to figure out how to listen to our computer, but yeah, no.
Okay, stand by. That'll be fine. Thanks for everything, Tracy.
No, thank you for listening and letting me have my mini pseudo nervous breakdown on national radio.
No.
Oh, my God.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
How All right. many people heard me break down?
Okay. You'd be surprised.
Okay.
We'll talk soon.
It's beer time. Bye, Bill.
Amen.
Bye,
see ya. Tracy calling from L.A. And for those of you who may not be longtime listeners of The Horn, that can't happen on commercial radio. That can't happen on profit-driven radio because in the time it took to have that incredibly personal, incredibly intense conversation with Tracy, I would have had to stop her in mid-sentence and say, wait a minute, we've got to advertise hemorrhoid cream now. Wait a minute, we've got to advertise Bigold now, or a vacuum cleaner that picks up bowling balls and drops them on Swedish mattresses. That's why from time to time I have to say, listen, this runs on your contributions. And there's a button under the Contribute tab at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, and it's PayPal, and PayPal sucks, and I know it. That's why there's a snail mail address, too. And that's why, you know, we have to do that kind of thing. Let's move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Philip in San Diego.
Well, hey, Philip. How are you?
Well, hanging in there. When I'm not having strokes or major trigeminal neuralgia attacks.
Well, those both suck.
Yeah, they do, but fortunately the meds are straightened out now. And now I just pretty much need sedatives after I've been watching everything that's happening.
That may be a matter of us all needing them, Philip.
Yeah, I feel so much for Tracy, and, you know, I take the blame for it, and we want to put the blame for everything that's happening on the teabaggers and the insane Republicans and everything like that, but the fault lies with us, and that's just my opinion, because we had a chance, you know, we had control of Congress in 2008. We didn't do much, you know, we certainly didn't do anything about terrestrial radio. We didn't do nothing about the propaganda. So the reason people are evil and the reason people think the way they do is because they're not always tuned into the Horn Network. They're not always tuned into Mike Malloy. They're tuned into Rush Limbaugh. They're tuned into the TV, or they're tuned into the Fox Network, you know, and they get their information from there. So that's why they're dumbed down. They don't want teachers here in California or any place. They don't want education because they want to keep people dumbed down. But the thing is, you know, we, as a group of Democrats, maybe not you and me and maybe not a lot of listeners, but a lot of people who are Democrats just sat back after Obama was elected and said, okay, change, and keep waiting and hoping and waiting, and it's not there. Now, the thing that's pissing me off today, really big time, is something Malloy had at the end of the program. It was on David Swanson's website about the California Progressive Caucus. I don't know if you've heard that story.
I have, but share.
Well, the deal is this. The caucus put in a resolution challenging Obama. Basically, without getting into the details of it, they brought up, you know, some very good points. You know, the biggest one for me is him renewing the Patriot Act, the continuation of the wars, all the things that we thought were going to be changed from the Bush crime.
Yeah, we'll stay in Iraq if they say pretty please.
Like you mentioned earlier on the program and stuff. So the challenge was to actually have a progressive liberal candidate primaries. Well, I've talked to Democrats about that on various places on the internet, and I get slammed. Absolutely. No, you got to vote for Obama. And I'm like, why? I don't think he did what he promised. I think he's a Republican myself. I think that's who the Republicans want reelected.
It's hard to avoid that conclusion sometimes, Philip. And maybe, you know, even if there is not a primary opponent, and I frankly don't think there will be, maybe the answer to that, I'll get letters for this, maybe the answer to that, because, you know, he's going to run unopposed, maybe the answer to that is for all of us progressives, liberals, whatever, who have periodically found ourselves under the bus, maybe the answer for that is to stay the hell home on primary day.
Maybe that is it.
Maybe that's the choice. None of the above. Because maybe, just maybe, if he sees the crapulastic numbers in the primary, he'll wonder, well, wait, where'd everybody go? But the sad fact of the matter is, Philip, we are what we are, but we are not that damn many. And fear is a profound motivating tool, and fear, and I feel it, so if I feel it, odds are a lot of other people do too. The fear of the words President Bachman, President Perry, President Romney, President Gingrich, President Huntsman, President any of these freaks will turn your bowels to water.
And yeah, and then you have to vote for Obama. But my thing with it is, you know, we're supposed to be the Democratic Party. We, as when I did talk radio, when you've done it now for a while on Horn, with Malloy, when Air America was on, everybody else, we kept talking about the same thing with the Republicans, how no matter what Bush did, they walked in lockstep with him.
Yes.
And what's pissing me off about this now is the Democrat Party, at least here in California, because, by the way, they were supposed to, the caucuses always get recertified at the same time. They didn't have the vote for it. The Progressive Caucus in California is now in limbo, and that vote has been tabled. So it kind of exists, but it don't anymore because of the resolution they put in. You see?
Yeah.
But it just annoys me because we bitched and moaned about the Republicans being in lockstep with Bush. How goddamn stupid are they? Can't they see what he's doing? Look at these people like lambs going to the slaughter just following him. And now we're being told that we have to do the same thing and that we can't have a choice. So maybe stay home on the prairies. But the thing is, you know, too, Bob, people have been too nice. Now, I get criticized for this a lot. Even Malloy got criticized, you know, yeah, a little bit. Couldn't get his pissed off, say dirty words, you know, because the affiliates didn't like it and stuff. It's too angry. And we got in this mode where we're all really nice. We're putting the flower in our hair, you know. I've been to marches and activities here in San Diego, protesting stuff. The No on 8 campaign here when we had Prop 8. We went to, my partner and I went to that, and we got told, well, don't say anything to counter protesters or anything negative. Just smile at them if there's media. And I'm like, wait a minute. My civil rights are being taken away. Shouldn't I be pissed off? So we are not. And again, it's not your listeners and it's not you and it's not people that think, but a good number of Democrats and people are not speaking out. And the politicians that are speaking out that are in Washington that have the balls to do it in Congress.
But you know, Philip, there are little hints of a bit of a shift. For instance, consider this. There are a dozen unions, and these are trade unions, okay? Like the building trades.
Mm-hmm.
There are more than a dozen trade unions who are members of the AFL-CIO's Building and Construction Trades Unit. That would be like sheet metal workers and welders and plumbers. And drywall hangers and stuff like that. All right? There are a dozen trade unions who have said unequivocally that they will not have anything to do with the Democratic National Convention in North Carolina. Why?
Good for them.
Because there is not a single unionized hotel in Charlotte, North Carolina, because the single, you know, you might think, oh, Alabama, Mississippi. Oh, hell no. The single most non-union, union-unfriendly state in the union is North Carolina, and Barack Obama chose Charlotte for his renominating convention. So 12 building and construction trades unions saying, sorry, we're taking a powder. That's significant because the conventions are funded is by massive contributions, not to individual campaigns, but to the effort to hold the convention itself.
And that will send a big message. That's incredibly important. And good for them. I'm glad.
Right. But see, that's huge, Philip. That is really, really big. And if they stay away, well, I mean, that's roughly the equivalent of us saying, well, you know, however many there are of us, you know, he doesn't have to have our vote in the primary. Because it's not, I mean, he's going to be the Democratic Party nominee for president, even if we were, you know, some sort of progressive dream were coming true. And Dennis Kucinich was going to run against him, or Alan Grayson, or Al Gore, or any of the other names that I've seen bandied about. He'd still be the nominee. Okay? You are not going to beat a sitting president in the nominating process unless that president chooses not to run and pulls an LBJ. So he's going to be the nominee one way or the other. But if there are a hell of a lot of people who sit out the primary and who sit out the convention, then at some point in time, they have to take notice. And now that hateful dumbass, Rahm Emanuel, that miserable piece of excrement, is out of the White House, maybe the response won't be to simply call progressives retarded.
Yeah, retarded. We're retarded, eh? Rahm Emanuel. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, we're the danger to what's going on here. And like I said, don't worry, everybody. Barack Obama will be reelected president. And the reason I say that is because if the Republicans really wanted to take back the White House,
they'd have a real candidate.
They'd have a real candidate. They wouldn't have this freaking Michelle.
If they wanted the White House back, Jeb Bush, Philip, would be in the race. It's that simple.
Exactly.
That simple.
That's volumes as well about, you know, are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? Or what are you, Barack Obama? All I know is I haven't seen a goddamn change. And when he renewed the Patriot Act, and then this budget deal behind closed doors, and acquiescing to these Nazi, crazy bastard Republican teabag, what do you call them? Tejadas. I love
Yeah, Tejadas. Yeah.
These people, you know, it just turns my...
Well, you know, I was up early enough that I caught a little bit of Morning Joe this morning, Philip, and most of the time I just spend the morning screaming when that's on. But poor old Mike Barnicle from Boston opined something. And he was advising, the conversation was swirling around how much hatred the right wing has for Barack Obama, you know, for reasons that aren't even intellectually legitimate. And he referred to that 1936 speech at Madison Square Garden by FDR, in which he talked about how much the Republican Party hated him, and said, "I welcome their hatred." And Barnicle said, you know, maybe it would be wise for Obama to take a page from that speech. And the first thing that went through my mind is, no, no, no! Because Barack Obama is not going to pick up on that "I welcome their hatred," because Barack Obama does not think the FDR was the way to go. Barack Obama is far more Dwight Eisenhower than FDR. Barack Obama, frankly, is closer to Herbert Hoover than FDR. And we need to just stop wishing he wasn't and deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not yelling at you, Philip. I hope you know that.
I know. I bitch and you know me. I bitch and yell a lot, too. That stuff, but you're absolutely right. You know, the people are like on this fantasy trip where they're expecting the miracle change or wait until he gets his second term.
Oh, no. That one just makes me start Tourette swearing.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Philip, I've got to run though, brother. I want to try to get a couple of more calls in, if at all humanly possible, and we will talk soon. I hope, and I'm glad to know that you're feeling better.
Yeah, I'll try and call in more now that I can actually talk and I'm not in pain.
That's a real bonus.
I sent my love out to Tracy too. I felt for what she was talking about and stuff, and it's a real shame, you know. And it just goes to show you what these people are like, you know. They care about the damn embryos, but they don't give a damn when people have children.
Bingo.
They do to that person like that. So I'm thinking of her, and I'll keep her in my prayers as well.
All right. Thank you, Philip. Take care, my friend.
You too.
Bye now. San Diego, that's Philip. Onward we go. Well, see? No patience, you guys. I got a couple of minutes left. We could have worked in another conversation, but you know, that's how it works sometimes. So that will close out the week's broadcasting. You know, like I said, I got to go walk the walk for a little bit, and then I'll be back on Monday and I'll talk the talk. In the meantime, we have $400 to raise between now and Monday. If we could get some help along those lines, it would be magnificent. Because you're the only way that the voices you hear here get out. And that's only 40 people at $10 a piece. You know, this isn't the fundraiser you see from a certain website every now and then. Oh, we have to raise $30,000 by tomorrow morning. No. Nobody's trying to get rich here. We're just trying to keep the conversation open. And you know that, and we are so appreciative of all the help. So much kindness, so much goodness. So tomorrow, we will be some friends and neighbors and colleague, attending a press conference outside the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting or Protection. And then I'll be on the road down to a state park in Virginia. Be back Friday. I don't know. You know, it's possible. Maybe I'll be back Friday evening for a show. If I am, I'll tweet it and you'll know first. But you have to follow me on Twitter before you can get my tweets. And you have to be friended up with me on Facebook or the Horns, the Horn, H period, O period, R period, N period, and then Paran Head On Radio Network. That's our Facebook page. And I just upgraded it, by the way. Thanks for the reminder, Brandon. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. And it takes a lot of people. It takes our chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie. Lottie's the boss in the chat room. It takes our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. It takes our blogger, Texas Betsy. It takes our chief engineer, head webmaster, web designer, musician, producer, man of many talents, John Fox. And it takes the good offices of the White Rose Society. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what it must be like to be Ben Burch and be the one person who literally saved liberal progressive talk by creating the White Rose Society on the Internet and archiving since 2002 and never sending a bill, but relying instead upon the kindness of people who had the bill paid. Thank you, Ben. Part of the reason the show reaches you every evening is because of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. Coal River Wind is now incorporated into CRMW.net. I mention them every night, but, well, I don't do a good enough job of telling you to go, really, go there and have a look, and perhaps even become a member of Coal River Mountain Watch. You hear a lot about their good works. When you're a member of Coal River Mountain Watch, you are a part of the good works that are being done. So I'll talk to you Monday. It's on the way. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Hope you're feeling better, Wayne.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
Broadcast Week. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Conversation radio unlike any other. And I'm awfully glad you could drop by for this initial broadcast of the week. Of course, it is Monday. And being Monday, you know that Monday has a special place in the broadcast schedule. Because it's the day we reserve after what is usually a very fruitful weekend of bad for-profit media and the usual assortment of weird right-wingers. Monday is the day we reserve for idiots. The knuckle walkers, the mouth breathers who move among us, seen, and today is no different. It absolutely is no different. Because, well, after all, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. Don't be shy, son. Come along. Leave the back of the crowd. Come forward. Be a leader, not a follower. Follow me right in behind this cybernetic thin veil of circus tent canvas, where you will see right-wing morons, media morons, morons beyond your wildest comprehension. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells them. You just can't tell them much. Because, after all, they are, in fact, morons. Morons everywhere. Head for the hills, folks, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. And I got a feeling we're going to be busy tonight. We got a better than usual crop of morons this weekend. Oh, we harvested a real bumper crop of morons this weekend. Media morons, right-wing presidential hopeful morons. Morons, morons, morons. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. And, well, let me just, I don't know that there's ever a clear winner for Moran Monday. But we will start out with an email from Sean. It says, I would like to nominate the people of the state of Iowa who voted for Michelle Bachmann and who send the brain-dead Steve King and the fence post Chuck Grassley back to Congress as morons for Moran Monday. Following Bachmann's straw poll win in Ames, my sister, now living in Utah, vows not to let the word Iowa cross her lips. Me, I kind of feel like the feeling of intellectual superiority when I look at those who know not what they do and whom I live among in this state. As a recovering dumb bastard myself, I served in Vietnam. I am tolerant of those who have not seen the light or choose not to see the light. The struggle continues. P.S. The tomatoes are slow to ripen, but I did 10 quarts of juice and 7 quarts of potatoes today. Oh! And it is such a good feeling looking at the jars sitting on my counter. Sweet corn is on, and this time of year is mighty fine eating. Oh, yes, it is. So, we get a double bonus out of Sean's email. On the one hand, we get our first Moran Monday nomination. And on the other hand, we get the opening salvo of food porn on the program this evening. By the way, for those of you who like me, not those of you who like me, you like me, you really, really like me. No. For those of you who like me, can you hear the commas now? For those of you who like me, enjoy watching Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations on the Travel Channel. I'll miss the first hour of Rick Smith and Malloy tonight. They both run at the same time back here. It can get kind of zany at times listening to two radio programs at once. I will be missing the first hour of both of them, however, because I will be watching No Reservations. He goes back, Bourdain goes back to, speaking of food porn, back to Ukraine. Or to Ukraine. And I think this should be a rather telling, it just keeps getting better. Because among other things, there will be a visit to Chernobyl. And for those of you who want to know what a visit to Fukushima will look like in 30 years, yeah, you might want to watch tonight. No reservations with Anthony Bourdain. But, that food porn, 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I don't know how we get to Kevin on this one, but you know how it works. It is Moran Monday, and yes, the people, the pig-licking people of the state of Iowa certainly have earned their little statuette and their certificate suitable for framing this evening. But in conjunction with that, I mean, because God, now I'm not being critical, because God knows this is funny. But suddenly, corn dogs are the new pig-licking meme. Honestly. Even as inept